phenomenon. Tile and wood and window glass. Subway pass is on the table. Thanks, Paris, he said, unzipping his FTF jacket and hanging it on a hook by the door. His shirt sleeves had ridden up again, and two rows of black tallies were now showing. He pulled the material down, even though Paris couldn't see the marks. Couldn't see anything, for that matter. Paris might be blind, but her other senses were sharp. Sharp enough to notice the absence of his violin, the barely audible vibration of its strings within the case. She blew a thoughtful puff of smoke. No concert today? She asked, dripping ash into her eggs. August's fingers curled the way they always did around the case's handle, but found only air. No, he said, digging the Colton Academy blazer from his bag and shrugging it on before the hall mirror. He was surprised to see his features crinkle, almost automatically into a frown. Flynn told me about your music, mumbled Paris to herself, and he knew by her tone that when she said your, she meant all three of them. Always wondered what it sounds like. August buttoned the blazer. I hope you never know, he said, heading for the door. I'll be back before dark. Have a good day at school, she called as it closed behind him, and unlike Leo, she actually sounded like she meant it. August stepped onto the street and breathed a sigh of relief when he saw the seam safely at his back. And then he turned north, and his eyes widened. He'd braced himself, but the difference between the two sides of V-City still caught him in the chest. North City wasn't a bombed-out shell. Whatever scars it had, they'd all been covered up, painted over. Here the buildings glittered, all metal, stone, and glass, the streets dotted with slick cars and people in nice clothes. If Harker had enforcers on the street, they blended in. A shop window was filled with fruit so colorful it made August want to try it, even though he knew it would taste like ash. Anger flared through him at the sight, the illusion of this safe, clean city, and the tallies across his skin prickled in warning, their warmth countered by the sickly cool weight of the medallion against his chest. Focus. Focus. The nearest subway station sat a block away. South City had shut down the subways. It was too dangerous, what with the Corsi flocking to the dark, and boarded up the passages as best they could, even though August knew the FTF still used the tunnels when they had to. He took the stairs two at a time. He'd read somewhere that V-City had grown up as much as out, that the buildings were actually built on top of the old grid, the subways where the original streets used to be. He didn't know if it was true, but the subway station below was as clean as the roads above. Buffed white stone, and somewhere underneath the sounds of foot traffic, a strain of classical music. A piano concerto. No signs of struggle or suffering. No remnant of the terrors that came out at night. It was a trick, meant to lure Southsiders over and remind Northsiders why they paid the price. August got to the platform just in time to miss the train. He slumped back against a post to wait for the next one, his attention wandering from a couple kissing farther down the line to a busker playing guitar before it finally settled on a small girl in front of him, clutching a woman's hand. She looked over at him, and August stared back, fascinated by the sight of such a young child. There were so few children in the compound, so few in South City for that matter. The girl broke into a toothy grin, and August found himself smiling back. And then she started singing.
Monsters, monsters, big and small,
she sang cheerfully.
They're gonna come and eat you all.
A shiver ran through him.
Corsi, Corsi, tooth and claw, shadow and bone will eat you raw. Malachi, Malachi, sharp and sly, smile and bite and drink you dry.
August swallowed hard, knowing what came next.
Sunai, Sunai, eyes like coal, sing you a song and steal your soul.
The little girl's smile grew even wider.
Monsters, monsters, big and small, they're gonna come and eat you all.
She gave a small, delighted squeal, and August felt ill and took a step away. When the train pulled into the station, he chose another car. Chapter 4
Monsters, monsters, big and small.
Kate hummed as the car barreled on. She tapped the tablet screen, closing out of the map and opening a new window, clicking through the folders on her father's private drive. She'd swiped the access codes on her first night home, until she found the one she was looking for. Harker had surveillance throughout North City, not just on the seam, but on nearly every block of the red zone. Every day the footage was checked and then cleared, save for any incidents. Those were stored so he could see them and take action if necessary. These incidents would never make the news, of course. They knew better than to put stuff like this on TV. It would disturb the illusion of normalcy, of safety. And that's what the people were paying for. But Harker had to keep an eye on his monsters, had to know when new ones showed up, when old ones misbehaved. The culled footage had been filtered into categories. Monster, human, Genesis. Kate had been working her way through the footage since the moment she arrived, trying to learn everything she could about the real monsters of Verity. She tapped Genesis, and it brought up two further options. Corsi or Malkai. They'd never caught a Sunai's creation on film. She felt like she was traveling down a rabbit hole as she tapped Corsi, and the screen filled with video clips, the thumbnails nothing but a blur of shadows. Her fingers hovered for a moment over the grid, and then she tapped a clip, and the footage expanded to fill the screen. The film had been trimmed, all the fat cut away, leaving only the violent meat of the incident behind. The camera didn't have a good angle, but she could still make out two men at the mouth of an alley, standing beneath a streetlight. It took her a moment to realize she was watching a fight. It started out as nothing, a conversation gone south, a shove into the wall, a clumsy punch. One of the men went down and the other started kicking him, over and over and over. Until the man on the ground was not a man, but a twitching tangle of limbs, his face a bloody mess. The attacker took off, and for several long seconds the man lay there on the pavement, chest lurching up and down in a broken way. And then, as he struggled to rise, the shadows around him began to move. He didn't notice, was too busy scraping himself off the ground, but Kate watched, transfixed, as the darkness stretched and twitched, peeled away from the walls and the street, and pulled itself together, its shape rising up like smoke. Face marked only by eerie white eyes that shook the camera's focus and the glistening of teeth. Its mouth yawned wide and its body wavered, slick and shiny, its limbs ending in talons. And the man, still on his hands and knees, made the mistake of crawling forward, out of the safety of the streetlight. The moment he crossed out of the light, it came. A flurry of teeth and claws that sank into the man's flesh and began to shred.
Violence breeds violence.
One of the teachers at St. Agnes had said that, after Nicole Teak tripped Kate and Kate reciprocated by breaking Nicole's nose. The teacher went on to make a point about how she was only perpetuating the problem, but by then Kate had stopped listening. As far as she was concerned, Nicole had deserved it. But the teacher had been right about one thing. Violence breeds. Someone pulls a trigger, sets off a bomb, drives a bus full of tourists off a bridge, and what's left in the wake isn't just shell casings, wreckage, bodies. There's something else. Something bad. An aftermath. A recoil. A reaction to all that anger and pain and death. That's all the phenomenon was, really. A tipping point. Verity had always been violent, the worst in all 10 territories. It was only a matter of time before there was enough mass, and all that bad started pulling itself together. Kate ran her thumb over the medallion pinned to the front of her uniform, protection from things that went bump. On her screen, the Corsi continued to feast. Most of the frenzy was lost in shadow, but here and there a razor glint of tooth or claw flashed on screen, and Kate watched as blood sprayed across the pool of light. She made a small, disgusted noise, glad the footage had no sound. Marcus waved from the other side of the partition, and Kate pulled the earbud from her ear, plunging herself back into a world of black and white, morning light, and the soft trill of piano keys. "What is it?" she asked, annoyed.
"Sorry, Miss Harker," said Marcus through the partition. "We're here."
Colton Academy sat at the place where the yellow met the green and the city streets gave way to suburbs. The safest zone of the city, where the richest could build their little shells and pretend that Verity wasn't being eaten alive. It looked like a photograph. Pale stone buildings sitting on a stretch of vivid green grass, all of it showered in crisp morning light. Only a 15-minute drive from the dark heart of North City, but you'd never know it by looking at the place. Kate guessed that was the point. She'd rather be at an inner-city institution, in the heart of the red, but most of them had been shut down, and even if it had been an option, her father wouldn't hear of it. If he had to have her in V-City, he was determined to keep her safe, which meant out of the way, since there was no such thing as safe in this place, no matter which half you called home. Marcus held open the door, and she stepped out, shaking off the memory of the Corsi and pulling her features back into alignment. She smoothed the collar of her Colton-issued polo, ran a hand over her pale hair. It was loose, parted to cover the scars where her head had struck the glass. It could have been worse. The hearing loss was partial, but she knew better than to let it show. It was a weakness all the same, and weaknesses should never show. That's what Harker told her back when she was 12 and the scars were all fresh.
"Why?"
she'd asked, because she'd been young and stupid.
"Every weakness exposes flesh," he'd said, "and flesh invites a knife."
"What are your weaknesses?"
she'd asked him, and Harker's mouth had become something that almost looked like a smile, but wasn't one. To this day, he'd never answered that question. Kate didn't know if it was because her father didn't trust her with his weaknesses or because he didn't have any. Not anymore. But she wondered if there was another version of Callum Harker in one of those other worlds, and if that one had secrets and weaknesses and places where knives could get.
"Miss Harker,"
said the driver.
"Your father wanted me to pass along a message."
She slipped her silver lighter into her shirt pocket. "What's that, Marcus?" she asked blandly.
"If you get yourself expelled, he'll ship you out of Verity. One way. For good."
Kate flashed a cool grin. "Why would I get myself expelled?" she said, looking up at the school. "I'm finally where I want to be." Chapter 5
"Park Station,"
announced a calm, metallic voice. August sank back against the train seat and tugged a well-read copy of The Republic from his backpack, opening it to the middle. He knew most of the text by heart, so it didn't matter which page he landed on. What mattered was that it gave him a reason to be looking down instead of up. He listened to the stops as they were announced, not willing to risk an upward glance at the grid in case he caught the attention of the cameras above. More little red eyes looking for monsters, even though everyone knew they all came out at night. Well, thought August, almost all.
"Martin Center."
Three stops to Colton. The subway car was filling up, and August stood, offering up a seat to an old woman. He kept his head bowed over the book, but his eyes trailed across the passengers, in their nice dresses and slacks, heels and suits, and not a weapon in sight. A man jostled his shoulder as he squeezed past, and August tensed. There was nothing unusual about the man himself, suit and tie, a bit slack around the middle. It was his shadow that caught August's eye. It didn't behave as a shadow should. In such a well-lit space, he shouldn't even have one. But when the man stopped, the shadow kept moving, twitching and shifting around him like a restless passenger. No one else could see it, but to August's eyes it loomed in the air, a ghostly thing with too many features for a shadow, too few for a man. August knew it for what it was. An echo of violence, a mark of sin. Somewhere in the city, a monster lived and killed because of this man, because of something he'd done. August's fingers tightened on the pole. If they were in South City, he would learn the man's name. It would be handed to him or Leo on a slip of paper along with an address, and he would find him in the night, silence the echo, and claim his life. But this was North City, where bad people got away with everything so long as they had the cash. August tore his eyes away as the old woman sitting on the bench leaned forward.
"I've always wanted to be on stage," she said in a confiding voice. "I don't know why I've never done it. I'm afraid it's too late now."
August closed his eyes.
"Union Plaza."
Two stops.
"I'm sure it's too late," the woman rambled on. "But I still dream about it."
She wasn't even talking to him. Not really. Monsters couldn't tell lies, but when humans were around Sunai, they became honest. August didn't have to compel them. If he could compel them not to open up, he would. They just started unloading. Most of the time, they didn't even realize they were doing it. Henry called it influence, but Leo had a better word.
Confession. Lyle Crossing.
One stop.
I still dream.
Confession was, without a doubt, his least favorite ability. Leo relished it, willing everyone around him to voice their doubts, their fears, their weaknesses. But it just made August uncomfortable.
"Do you dream?"
"Colton,"
announced the voice overhead. The train ground to a halt and August said a silent prayer as he fled the subway car, the woman's confession following him out. If North City was surreal, Colton was something else entirely. August had never been this far from the red. The academy was fenced in, but unlike the seam, the walls seemed more aesthetic than functional. Beyond the wrought iron gate, Colton Academy sat on a rolling stretch of grass, a line of trees at its back. August had seen trees once before, in a run-down park 3 blocks south of the compound. But these were different. There were enough of them to make a wall. No, a forest. That was the name for so many. But the trees didn't distract him nearly as much as the people. Everywhere he looked, he saw them. Not FTF cadets or North civilians, but teenagers in Colton's trademark blue. Boys and girls walking through the gates or sitting clustered in the grass. He marveled at the easy way they chatted and hung on one another, elbows bumping, arms thrown around shoulders, head to head and hip to hip. The way their faces broke into broad grins or pursed in annoyance or opened with laughter. They made it look so natural. What was he doing here? Maybe Leo was right. He should have eaten something. Too late now. He fought the urge to retreat, tried to remind himself that he'd wanted a way out of the compound, that Leo, of all people, had vouched for him, that he had a job to do, one as important as the rest of the FTF. He forced his feet forward, so sure with every step that someone would see through the Colton clothes and the practiced smile and notice he wasn't human, as if it were written on his face as plainly as the marks down his arm. All of a sudden, the hours spent before the mirror seemed ridiculous. How could he ever mimic this? How could he think that he was capable of passing for one of them, just because they were the same age? The thought snagged him. They weren't the same age. They only looked his age. No, that wasn't right. He looked their age because they'd all been born, and he'd woken up in the shape of a 12-year-old boy because that's how old they'd been. The bodies and the black bags when it started with a bang. Not the universe, only the sharp staccato bursts of gunfire, and he slammed to a stop, struggling for air. Someone bumped his shoulder. Not a friendly jostle, but a hostile jab, and August stumbled forward, regaining his balance in time to see the guy, broad-shouldered and blonde, shoot a hard look back.
"What's your problem?"
snapped August, the question out before he could think to stop it. The boy spun on him.
"You were in my way,"
he growled, grabbing August's collar.
"You think I'm gonna let some shit newbie mess this up? This is my year, asshole. My school."
And then, to August's horror, the guy kept talking.
Think you can scare me with that creepy stare? I'm not afraid of you. I'm not afraid of anyone.
He shuddered, forcing August closer.
I can't sleep. Every time I close my eyes, I see them.
Hey now, said another student over August's shoulder. There a problem, Jack?
The blonde guy, Jack, blinked a few times, gaze sharpening, and then shoved August backward. The other student caught his shoulder.
Come on, no need for that. My friend here's sorry. He didn't mean to piss you off.
His tone was friendly, casual.
Keep him away from me, Colin, snapped Jack, his voice normal again, before I break his smug face.
Will do,
Colin shook his head.
Ass,
he muttered as Jack stormed away. He turned toward August. A short, slim boy with a widow's peak and warm eyes set in an open face.
Making friends on your first day, huh?
August straightened, smoothed his jacket.
Who said it was my first day?
Colin laughed, an easy sound, as natural as breathing.
It's a small school, dude,
he said with a grin.
And I've never seen you before. You got a name?
August swallowed.
Frederick,
he said.
Frederick,
echoed Colin, raising a single brow. August wondered if he'd made a mistake, chosen the wrong name.
Yeah,
he said slowly, then added,
but you can call me Freddy.
No one had ever called him Frederick or Freddy, but it was the right answer. Colin's face morphed again, from skepticism to cheer in an instant.
Oh, thank God,
he said.
Frederick is a really pretentious name. No offense, not your fault.
They started walking toward the main building together, but a pair of students called Colin's name.
Hey, I'll see you inside,
he said as he jogged over to meet them. Halfway there, he twisted around with a grin.
Try not to piss off anyone else before school starts.
August managed a ghost of the boy's smile.
I'll do my best.
Name? Asked the woman in the registration office.
Frederick Gallagher,
said August, managing what he hoped was a nervous smile as he brushed a strand of hair out of his eyes.
But I go by Freddy.
Ah,
said the woman, pulling out a folder with a yellow band along the top.
You must be one of our new students.
He nodded, tweaked the smile. This time she smiled back.
Look at you, she said. Dark hair, kind eyes, dimples. They're gonna eat you up.
August wasn't sure what she meant.
I hope not,
he said. She only laughed. Everyone laughs so easily here.
You still need to get your identification card, she said. Go next door and hand them the top page in your folder. They'll take care of you.
She hesitated, looked like she was about to say something more, something personal. He backed away before she could. Next door, a short line spilled out of a door marked ID registration. August watched as a student at the front of the line handed the man behind the counter his paper, then stepped in front of a pale green backdrop. He grinned, and an instant later a flash went off. August cringed. Another student repeated the process. And another. He backed away. The rest of the students seemed to be heading for a large pair of doors at the other end of the lobby, so he followed them and found himself at the mouth of an auditorium. There was some unspoken system, a natural order that everyone else seemed to understand. They filed toward their seats, and August hung back, trying not to interrupt the flow of traffic.
What year?
Asked a woman's voice. He turned to find a teacher in a skirt holding a stack of folders.
Junior,
he said. She nodded.
You're sitting down front on the left.
The auditorium was filling with bodies and noise as he found a seat, and the sheer quantity of both left him dizzy, dazed. All around him, hundreds of voices talked over and under and through one another, layering like music. But the cadence was all wrong, less like classical than jazz. And when he tried to pick the threads apart, he wasn't left with chords, just syllables and laughter and sounds that made no sense. And then, mercifully,
It quieted, and he looked up to see a man in a crisp blue suit striding across the stage.
"Hello,"
he said, tapping the mic on the podium.
"I'm Mr. Dean, and I'm the head of school here at Colton. I want to welcome our freshmen to a new school and our returning students to a fresh year. You might not have noticed that we have several new students joining our ranks. And because Colton is a community, I'm going to ask them to stand when I call their names so that you can make a point of making them feel welcome here."
August's stomach dropped.
"We have two new sophomores, Marjorie Tan."
A girl got to her feet a dozen rows behind him, blushing deeply under the collective gaze. She immediately started to sit down again, but the headmaster waved his hand.
"Please stay standing,"
he insisted.
"Now, Ellis Casterfeld?"
A lanky boy got to his feet and waved at the room.
"Juniors, we have one student joining your ranks."
August's heart pounded.
"Mr. Frederick Gallagher."
August exhaled, relieved not to hear his name. And then he remembered that Frederick was his name. He swallowed and stood. The juniors to every side shifted in their seats to get a better look at him. His face went hot, and for the first time, August wished he could be less real, maybe even disappear. And then the headmaster said her name, and in a way, he did.
"And finally, a new senior, Miss Catherine Harker."
The auditorium went silent. Everyone else was forgotten as near the front, a girl rose to her feet. Every head in the room turned toward her. Catherine Harker. The only child of Callum Harker. The governor of North City. A man known for collecting monsters like weapons. And the reason August had been sent to Colton. He thought back to the conversation he'd had with Henry and Leo.
"I don't understand. You want me to go to school? With her?"
His nose crinkled at the thought. Harker was the enemy, a murderer. Catherine was a mystery, but if she was anything like her father...
"And do what, exactly?"
"Follow her,"
said Leo.
"Colton's too small. She'll notice me."
"You won't be you,"
said Leo.
"And we want her to notice. We want you to get close."
"Not too close,"
cut in Henry.
"We just want you to keep an eye on her, in case we need leverage. It's the same reason her people are looking for you,"
explained Leo.
"When this truce breaks..."
"If the truce breaks,"
said Henry.
"She might come in handy."
"We don't know anything about her,"
said August.
"She's Harker's daughter. If he cares about anyone, it's her."
August stared at the girl in the front row. Catherine looked like her father, slim and sharp and full of angles. Her hair was different from the photo he'd seen. Still blonde, but shoulder length, stock straight and parted so it covered half her face. Most of the Colton girls had opted for skirts with their polos, but she was wearing slim-cut slacks, her hands hooked casually in her pockets. All around August, people began to whisper. And then Catherine, who'd been looking forward with a cool, empty gaze, turned and looked over her shoulder at him. She didn't know, couldn't know who he was. But her dark eyes tracked over him in a slow, appraising way, the very edge of a smile on her lips before Headmaster Dean instructed them to take their seats. August sank into his chair, feeling like he'd just escaped a brush with death.
"Now," continued the headmaster, "if you haven't gotten your ID card yet, make sure to retrieve it by the end of the day. Not only can you use the card to pay for lunch and school supplies, but you'll need it to access certain parts of the campus, including the theater, sports facilities, and soundproof music rooms."
August's head shot up. He didn't care about the cafeteria, had little interest in drama or fitness, but a place where he could play in peace? That would be worth an ID.
"An attendant will be in the ID room during lunch and for half an hour after school."
The headmaster rambled on for several more minutes, but August had stopped listening. When the assembly was over, the wave of students carried him out of the auditorium and into the lobby, where it took him roughly 30 seconds to realize he had no idea where he was supposed to go next. The hall was a tangle of uniformed bodies. He tried to get out of the way as he dug his schedule from his bag.
"Hey, Frederick!"
He looked up and saw Colin jostling through the crowd. He caught August by the sleeve and pulled him out of the current.
"I've got you."
His gaze flicked down, and he saw August's forearm where the sleeve had pushed up. Those expressive eyes went wide.
"Oh, nice tattoos, dude. But don't let Dean see them. He's crazy strict. I wore a temporary one on my face one time. I think it was a bee. I don't remember why. And he made me scrub it off. School policy."
August tugged his sleeve back down, and Colin stole a glance at the sheet in his hand.
"Oh, perfect. We have English together. I thought I saw your name on the roster. I check all the rosters ahead of time just to see who I'm up against, you know?"
August did not know, and he couldn't tell if it was his influence making Colin so chatty or if the boy was just naturally that way. But he suspected the latter.
"Anyway, come on."
Colin tugged him toward a stairwell door.
"I know a shortcut."
"To where?"
"To English, obviously. We could take the hall, but there are too many damn freshmen,"
he bellowed. Several smaller students glanced wide-eyed at him, and the teacher in the skirt shot Colin a dark look.
"Get to class, Mr. Stevenson."
Colin only winked at her and stepped into the stairwell, holding the door for August, who wasn't sure if he was being helped or abducted. But he didn't want to be late for the first class of his life, so he followed anyway. Just before the door banged shut, he thought he saw Catherine Harker walk past, the students around her parting like a sea. Chapter 6. When people talked about the first day of school, they used terms like fresh start and new beginning, and always made a point of saying it was a chance to define or redefine yourself. In Kate's eyes, the first day was an opportunity. One she'd taken advantage of at each of her previous institutions. And those first days felt like an education unto themselves, leading up to this. Her first day at Colton was a chance to set the tone. A chance to make an impression. She had the added advantage of being on home turf. People here might not know her, but they all knew of her. And that was better. It was a foundation. Something to be built upon. By the end of the week, Colton would be hers. After all, if she couldn't rule a school, she didn't deserve to run a city. Kate didn't actually care that much about running a school or a city. She just didn't want Harker to look at her and see weak, see helpless, see a girl who shared nothing but a few lines of his face, a shade of blonde. She wanted him to look at her and see someone who deserved to be there, because she'd be damned if she'd let him send her away. Not this time. She fought her way here, and she'd fight to stay. "I am my father's daughter," she thought as she walked down the hall, arms at her side and head up, medallion and metallic nails glinting beneath the lights. She thought of the monstrous teeth shining in the footage, and it gave her strength. Eyes followed her through the halls, lips moved behind cup fingers. To every side, the students swarmed and parted. Rushed forward and drew back like a wave, a flock of starlings, all together, all apart.
"You have to break them early,"
her father once said. Of course, he'd been talking about monsters, not teenagers, but they had a lot in common. Both had hive minds. They thought and acted in groups. Cities and schools were both microcosms of life, and small schools came with their own delicate ecosystem. St. Agnes had been the smallest of the bunch, with only 100 girls, while Fisher, her first private school, weighed in at a considerable 650. Colton Academy was 400 strong, which was small enough to feel intimate, but large enough to guarantee at least a modicum of resistance. It was natural. There were always those who wanted to challenge the ruling power, to stake their own claim to authority or popularity or whatever it was they were after, and Kate could usually pick them out within the first few days. They were a disruption to the hive mind, those few, and she knew she'd have to deal with them as soon as possible. All she needed was an opportunity to establish herself. And to her surprise, one presented itself almost immediately. She'd known there would be whispers about her, rumors. They weren't inherently bad. In fact, some of them were practically propagandistic. As she moved through the halls between classes, she cocked her head, catching the loudest ones. I heard she burned her last school down.
I heard she's been to jail.
I heard she drinks blood like a Malkai.
Did you know she axed a student?
Psychopath.
Killer.
And then, as she stepped into her next class, she heard it.
I heard her mother went crazy.
Kate's step slowed. Yeah, continued the girl, loud enough for her to hear.
She went crazy, tried to drive them off a bridge.
Kate set her bag down on a desk and ruffled through it absently, turning her good ear toward the girl.
I heard Harker sent her away because he couldn't stand to look at her. She reminded him of his dead wife. Charlotte, whispered another girl. Shut up!
Yes, Charlotte, thought Kate. Shut up. But Charlotte didn't. Maybe he sent her away because she was crazy, too. Not crazy, Kate wanted to say. No, he thought she was young, thought she was weak like her mother. But he was wrong. She dug her nails savagely into her palms and took her seat, eyes on the board. She sat like that all through class, head high, but she wasn't listening, wasn't taking notes. She didn't hear a word the teacher said, didn't care. She sat still and waited for the bell to ring, and when it did, she followed Charlotte out and down the hall. Whatever class she had next wasn't as important as this. When the girl detoured into the nearest bathroom, Kate followed, throwing the bolt behind her. Charlotte, pretty in such a boring way, was standing at the sink, retouching her makeup. Kate came up beside her and began rinsing the crescents of blood from her palms. Then she tucked her hair behind her ear, showing the scar that traced her face from temple to jaw. The other girl looked up, found Kate's gaze in the mirror, and had the audacity to smirk.
Can I help you?
What's your name? Asked Kate. The girl raised a bleached brow and dried her hands.
Charlotte, she said, already turning to go.
No, said Kate slowly. Your full name. Charlotte stopped, suspicious.
Charlotte Chapel.
Kate gave a small, silent laugh.
What's so funny? Snapped the girl.
Kate shrugged. I burned down a chapel once. Charlotte's face crinkled with disgust.
Freak,
she muttered, walking away. She didn't make it very far. In an instant, Kate had her up against the wall, 5 metal-tipped fingers wrapped around her throat. With her free hand, Kate drew the lighter from her pocket. She pressed a notch on the side and a silver switchblade slid out with a muted snick. Charlotte's eyes went wide.
You're even crazier than I thought, she gasped.
For a moment, Kate thought about hurting her, seriously hurting her. Not because it would serve some purpose, just because it would feel really, really good. But getting expelled would negate everything she'd done to get here.
He'll ship you out of Verity, one way, for good.
When the headmaster hears about this?
He won't, said Kate, resting the knife against Charlotte's cheek. Because you're not gonna tell him. She said it in the same way she said everything, with a quiet, even voice. She'd seen a documentary once on cult leaders and the traits that made them so effective. One of the most important features was a commanding presence. Too many people thought that meant being loud, but in truth it meant someone who didn't need to be loud. Someone who could command an audience without ever raising their voice. Kate's father was like that. She'd studied him. In the slivers of time they'd had together, and Callum Harker never shouted. So neither did Kate. She loosened her fingers on Charlotte's throat just a little and brought the knife to the medallion hanging against the girl's uniform shirt,
tapping the engraved V casually with her blade.
I want you to remember something, Charlotte Chapel. She leaned in. That pendant may protect you from the monsters, but it won't protect you from me.
The bell rang and Kate pulled back, flashing her best smile. The knife disappeared into the lighter and her hand fell away from the girl's throat.
Run along now, she said icily. You wouldn't want to be late.
Charlotte clutched her bruised throat and scrambled out of the bathroom. Kate didn't follow. She went to the sink, washed her hands again, and smoothed her hair. For an instant, she met a reflection's gaze and saw another version of herself behind the stormy blue. One who belonged to a different life, a softer world. But that Kate had no place here. She took a long breath, rolled her neck, and went to class. Confident, she'd made a solid first impression. Chapter 7 August was supposed to be in gym. Or at least every other junior was supposed to be in gym, and probably was, but thanks to a health condition, asthma, according to his file, he'd been granted a study hall instead. August did not have asthma. What he did have were 418 uniform lines running the length of one arm and starting to wrap around his back and chest, and Henry was worried that they would draw attention. So instead, August was in study hall. Or at least, he had been. He imagined the study hall might come in handy, but it being the first day of school, he had nothing to study. So he'd asked the monitor if he could go to the bathroom and never came back. Now he was standing outside the ID office. On the way there, he tried to think up an excuse for not wanting his photo taken. He'd read once about a tribe that believed being photographed would steal their soul. But in the end, he didn't need an out. The office was empty. The lights were on, and when he tried the handle, the door was unlocked. August looked around nervously, then stepped inside, pulling the door shut behind him. The ID form was still up on the computer screen, and he typed in his details. Frederick Gallagher, 16, junior, 5'10", black hair, gray eyes. An empty rectangle sat waiting to the right of the information. August knew what it was for. He swallowed and hit the delayed action photo button, then stepped in front of the pale backdrop just like he'd seen the other students do. He looked straight into the camera lens and the flash went off. August blinked the light from his eyes and held his breath as he rounded the counter, but his heart sank when he saw the photo on the screen. His expression was a little too vacant, but his face had almost all the right components. Jawline, mouth, nose, cheekbones, hair. An ordinary boy. Except his eyes. Where August's eyes should be, there was only a smudge of black. As if someone had drawn his face in charcoal and then smeared it.
Sunai, Sunai, eyes like coal, sang a voice in his head.
His stomach twisted. Retake? Prompted the computer. He clicked, yes. This time he didn't look straight at the camera, but just above it. No luck. The same dark smudge still obscured his gaze. August tried again, and again, and again, each time cheating his eyes a fraction to the left or the right, high or low, the smudge of black shifting, sometimes thinning, but always there. His vision filled with dots of light, a dozen flashes every time he blinked. The last take stared back at him from the screen, his eyes obscured by the same black streak, but a small, frustrated crease visible in his brow. He shouldn't have bothered, should have known it wouldn't work. But he'd hoped. For what?
A chance to play at being human,
chided his brother's voice.
Sing you a song and steal your soul,
he shook his head. Bang. Too many voices. Retake, prompted the computer. August's finger hovered over no, but after a moment he clicked yes. One more time. He stepped in front of the screen, took a deep breath, and readied himself for the inevitable flash, the disappointment of a final failed attempt. But the flash never came. He heard the digital click of the camera, but the light must have glitched.
He crossed to the screen, heart thumping, and looked. His breath caught. The boy on the screen was standing there, hands shoved in his pockets. He wasn't looking at the camera. His eyes were half-lidded, his head turned away. The faintest blur to his edges. A picture snapped mid-motion. But it was him. No black streak. No empty gaze. August exhaled a shuddering breath and clicked print. And a minute later, the machine spat out his ID. He stared at the image for several long seconds, transfixed, then pocketed the card and slipped out of the office just as the bell rang for lunch. He was halfway to his locker when a voice called his name. Well, Freddie's name. He turned to find Colin, flanked by a boy on one side and a girl on the other.
"Alex and Sam, this is Freddie,"
he said by way of introduction.
"Freddie, Alex and Sam."
August wasn't sure which one was Alex and which was Sam. "Hey," said one of them.
"Hey,"
echoed the other.
"Hello,"
said August. Colin swung an arm around his shoulder, which was hard to do considering he was a full 6 inches shorter. August tensed at the sudden contact, but didn't pull away.
"You look lost."
August started to shake his head when Colin cut him off.
"You hungry?"
he asked cheerfully.
"I'm starving. Let's get some lunch."
Gives me the creeps.
"Party this weekend."
Such an asshole.
"Jack and Charlotte an item."
August stared down at his half-eaten food. The cafeteria was loud, much louder than he'd expected. The constant clatter of trays and laughter and shouts as staccato as gunfire. But he tried not to think about that and instead focused on the green apple he was rolling between his hands. Apples were his favorite food, not because of the way they tasted, but because of how they felt. The cool, smooth skin, the solid weight. But he could feel Sam, that was the girl, it turned out, watching him. So he brought the apple to his mouth and bit down, fighting back a grimace. August could eat, but he didn't enjoy it. The act wasn't repulsive. It was just... people talked about the decadence of chocolate cake, the sweetness of peaches, the groan-inducing pleasure of a good steak. To them, every food was an experience. To August, it all tasted the same. And it all tasted like nothing.
"That's because it's people food,"
Leo would say.
"I'm a person,"
he'd say, tensing.
"No,"
his brother would shake his head.
"You're not."
August knew that he meant, "you're more." But it didn't make him feel like more. It made him feel like an imposter. Now the way other people felt about food, that's how August felt about music. He could savor each note, taste the melody. The thought made his tallies prickle, his fingers ache for the violin. Across the table, Colin was telling a story. August wasn't listening, but he was watching. As Colin talked, his face went through an acrobatic procession of expressions, one folding into the next. August took a second bite, chewed, swallowed, and set the apple down. Sam leaned forward.
"Not hungry?"
Before August could show her the half-eaten contents of his bag, Colin cut in.
"I'm always hungry,"
he said with his mouth full.
"Like, always."
Sam rolled her eyes.
"I've noticed."
The boy, Alex, speared a piece of fruit.
"So, Frederick,"
he said, emphasizing every syllable in the name.
"Colton doesn't get a lot of new blood. You get thrown out of one of the other academies?" "I heard she got kicked out,"
whispered Colin. He didn't have to say who. "That's not the only reason people change schools," said Sam, turning to Alex. "Just because you got tossed..."
"It was a voluntary transfer,"
said Alex, turning his attention back to August.
"Well, expulsion? Transfer? Bang a teacher?"
"No," he answered automatically, and then slower.
"I was homeschooled."
"Ah,
no wonder you're so quiet."
"Alex," said Sam, angling a kick under the table. "That's rude."
"What? I could have said weird."
Another kick.
It's okay,
said August, managing a smile.
I'm just not used to so many people.
Where do you live?
Asked Colin around a mouthful of pasta. August took another bite of apple, using it to force down the words rising in his throat. In those stolen seconds, he sorted through his lines, trying to find the right truth.
Near the seam,
he answered.
Damn,
said Alex, whistling.
In the red?
Yeah,
said August, slowly.
But it's North City, so... It's only scary if you don't have a medal,
added Colin, tapping the embossed pendant around his neck. Sam was shaking her head.
I don't know. I've heard bad things happen in the red, even to those with Harker's protection.
Alex shot a look across the cafeteria.
Don't let her hear you say that. She'll tell her dad.
Colin shrugged and started talking about a concert. The boy's mind seemed to jump around even more than his, but August followed Alex's gaze. Catherine was sitting alone at a table, but she didn't look lonely. In fact, there was a small, defiant smile on her lips, as if she wanted to be alone, as if the fact people avoided her was a badge. August didn't get it.
You want to come, Freddy?
He watched as she picked at her food in a slow, disinterested way, as she drew a metallic nail around the edge of her pendant, as she got to her feet.
Freddy?
The current of the cafeteria shifted with the movement, eyes drifting her way. But she didn't seem to mind. She kept her head up as she dumped the tray and walked out.
He's not even listening.
August's attention snapped back.
Sorry, what? Concert, Saturday. You want to come?
None of us are going,
Sam cut in, sparing August from having to answer. Because there's a curfew, Colin, and it's practically in the waste.
And we don't want to die,
added Alex in a gross exaggeration of Sam's tone. He flailed his arms as he said it.
My mom would skin me, said Sam, ignoring the impersonation.
Not if of course I did it first,
teased Alex. Sam gave him a horrified look and punched him in the shoulder.
Ow! I just think,
said Colin, leaning across the table,
that life is short, you know?
His tone was soft, conspiratorial. He had a way of making August feel like he wasn't new, like he'd been there all along.
You can't spend it afraid.
August found himself nodding, even though he spent most of his time afraid. Afraid of what he was, afraid of what he wasn't, afraid of unraveling, becoming something else, becoming nothing.
Yeah,
cut in Alex.
Life is short, and it'll be a hell of a lot shorter if you go wandering at night.
Colin's mouth quirked.
Freddy's not afraid of monsters, are you?
August didn't know how to answer that.
He didn't have to. I totally saw one once,
added Colin.
You are so full of it.
What did you do?
I obviously ran like hell.
August laughed.
It felt good.
And then, between one bite of apple and the next, the hunger started. It began as nothing, or almost nothing, like the moment before a cold starts, that split second of wooziness that warns you a fever is coming. Dwelling on it, is that a tickle? Is my throat getting scratchy? How long have I been sniffling? Only made it worse faster, and he tried to smother the spike of panic even as it shot through him.
Ignore it,
he told himself.
Mind over body.
Which would work right up until the hunger spread from body to mind, and then he'd be in trouble. He focused on his breathing, forced air down his throat and through his lungs.
Hey, Freddy, you okay?
Asked Colin, and August realized he was gripping the table.
You look a little sick. Yeah,
he said, pushing to his feet, nearly tripping as his legs tangled in the chair.
I'm gonna grab some fresh air.
August swung his bag onto his shoulder, trashed what was left of his lunch, and pushed through the cafeteria doors, not caring where they led, so long as they led out. He was behind the school, the trees a green line in the distance. The air was cool, and he gulped it in, muttering,
You're okay. You're okay. You're okay.
To himself, before realizing he wasn't alone. Someone cleared her throat, and August turned to find Catherine Harker leaning against the building, a cigarette dangling from her fingers. Bad day? Chapter 8. Kate just wanted a moment of peace. A moment to breathe and think and not be on display. Charlotte's words were still lodged under her skin.
I heard her mother went crazy, tried to drive them off a bridge.
The words brought back not one memory, but two. Two different worlds. Two different Kates. One lying in a field, the other stretched on the pavement. One surrounded by rustling quiet of the country, the other surrounded by ringing silence. She brought her fingers absently to the scar beneath her hair, traced a metallic nail around the curve of her ear. Disconcerting to be able to feel but not hear the drag of nail on flesh. Just then the doors burst open and a boy stumbled through. Kate's hand dropped away from her ear. The boy looked a little lost and a little ill, and she couldn't really blame him. He'd come from the cafeteria, and that place was enough to set anyone off balance. Bad day? He looked up, startled, and she recognized him. Frederick Gallagher, the new junior. Up close, he looked more like a stray dog than a student. He had wide gray eyes beneath a mop of messy black hair and a starved look about him, bones pressing against his skin. She watched him open his mouth, close it, open it again, only to offer a single word.
Yeah.
Kate tapped ash off the cigarette and pushed herself up to her full height. You're the new kid, right? One black brow lifted, just a fraction.
So are you,
he shot back. The answer caught her off guard. She'd expected him to be a mumbler, or maybe a groveler. Instead, he looked straight at her when he spoke, and his voice, though soft, was steady. Maybe not a stray dog, then.
It's Catherine, right?
Kate, she said.
Frederick? Freddy,
he corrected. She took a drag on her cigarette, frowned. You don't look like a Freddy. He shrugged, and for a second they stood there, sizing each other up, the moment stretching, the gaze growing uncomfortable until his gray eyes finally broke free, escaping to the ground. Kate smiled, victorious. She gestured to the patch of pavement, the border of grass. What brings you to my office? He looked around, confused, as if he'd actually intruded. Then he looked up and said,
The view.
Kate flashed a crooked grin. Oh, really? His face went red.
I didn't mean you,
he said quickly.
I was talking about the trees.
Wow, she said dryly. Thanks. How am I supposed to compete with pine and oak?
I don't know,
said Freddy, cocking his head. Stray dog again.
They're pretty great.
She tucked her hair behind her ear and caught Freddy's glance. It didn't linger. There was a flush in his cheeks, but it wasn't all embarrassment. He really did look ill. I'd offer you a chair, she said, tapping ash on the pavement.
It's all right,
he said, slumping back against the adjacent wall.
I just needed some air.
She watched his chest empty and fill and empty again, gray eyes leveled on a low bank of clouds. There was something about those eyes, something present and distant at the same time. Where are you? She wondered, the question on the tip of her tongue. Here, she held out the cigarette. You look like you could use one. But Freddy waved his hand.
No, thanks,
he said.
Those things will kill you.
She laughed, soft, soundless. So will lots of things around here. A rueful smile.
True.
The bell rang and she pushed off the wall. See you around, Freddy.
Do I need to schedule an appointment?
He asked. She waved a hand. My office is always open. With that, she stubbed out the cigarette and went inside. By the end of the day, Kate was untouchable. Word had obviously spread, at least